Hello, everybody. This is a results-based game, and last week we drafted an AFL lineup for a head-to-head 5x5 matchup. Tonight, or today, or this morning, whenever you're listening to this, we are going to see who won and who are the AFL League, that's the Arizona Fall League, standouts. It's time for Dingers!
This is Dingers, way more than fantasy baseball. We keep it real when we talk and knock it straight out the park. Let's see the stats. What's the average draft position? What kind of plays you making? Check the wins above replacement. Check the lineups and the points. This I gotta see. What's your path to victory? Are they aiming for a dynasty? Get points going head to head. Please don't do me no favors. We're always watching waivers. Ain't no minor league. This is major. Yeah, Dingers. Let's go.
Welcome to Dingers, the only fantasy baseball podcast for smart people. It's not just G-Man Choi that wins you championships. That's why week in and week out, we're delivering tips and strategies to help you live that straight up OG lifestyle. Joining me, as always, Face for Radio, Robbie Baseball. What's happening?
What? Face for it? Come on. We podcast. They've got the option to do both, right? Find us on the YouTube.
Well, but you said AFL League. So I couldn't let you get away. Oh, with that.
Yeah, that's Bush.
That's yeah.
That is Bush.
That's how apologies. You get sent to the AFL.
Yeah, I've been watching the Wrexham thing on FX. Wrexham
FC. I've watched a little bit of it myself,
and I didn't know beforehand. But the more you see Ryan Reynolds, the more obvious it is that he's not a sports guy.
Yeah.
And it like not that it's overly disappointing. I mean, who cares? He's I don't know the dude. I mean, he's Canadian, so may as well be brothers. But he's really coming across as quite green on a lot of the sports things. And he would say AFL League. I bet
he. Yeah, would you're probably that. Right. I think there's a bit of a bit there. I think they're setting it up to pretend they're not very smart, and then oh look at us, we're. Kind of have an idea of what we're doing, and there was a reason we did this, and we really do like. I feel like there's a story that they're intentionally trying to illustrate. Like, I mean, it is part of the plan. Like, it's not like they're like, oh, we're going to do a documentary on these guys because they did this. Like, that was literally part of their acquisition strategy is to do the documentary.
Yeah, I mean, they bought a team specific, like perfect for what they wanted to do, which was like, who's not going to tell us no? Like the bottom tier team that has a storied history. Like that's a bonus because they've sucked. I've watched all like everything they've done so far, and then I've seen how they're doing now in year two of the ownership. And I mean, they're doing what every fan wants their team to do, or what the fans want their owners to do, which is like make the team better, make the facility better, make it a better experience, and that's what they're doing. But I think they're playing small ball because there's rumors now that Ryan Reynolds might be buying the Ottawa Senator.
Did you see the Deadpool Senators logo? Did you
no.
get your eyes on that?
I have not yet, but that'd
clever.
Be
so I don't know who did that. It was pretty clever. But yeah, I mean, I think it's a cool thing. I've been saying this to a bunch of people that watching that Wrexham video. Like, I can't believe there's not a bigger real estate play around that town. Like, it just feels like these guys came in and bought a bunch of real estate. Then they bought the team. They're telling a story about this team to bring people to the town. And then there's all this other stuff that they're invested in around it. Like, it just doesn't, like, it seems so weird to me. And maybe I'm overthinking it, but I just can't get off of that.
No, I think the end goal is that they're redoing the whole, they don't currently, like, whatever. Now they do. But through the documentary, without giving anything away, they don't actually have the land yet. It's leased for, like, a buck or whatever. So they're in the, during the, recording the documentary, they end up buying the land, but then they release like what their plan is, which is to take one end of the stadium that's in shambles and then make it into like the best thing, which is actually going to obviously improve the property, which then means it's an investment and the land's going to be worth more. So that way, when the time comes for them to depart, they now have turned, you know, a decrepit thing into a state-of-the-art facility. And ideally, they've also taken a fifth league or whatever, the National League club, and turned them into like a League One or whatever team. You know,
understood.
That's the...
Yeah. But I'm saying I think they own real estate around.
Oh,
That's what I'm saying. It's like, it just feels like that would be the smart thing to do in that model, but I was, it's all speculation. Anyway,
you know, fantasy baseball.
Yeah. Non-documentary soccer. Right.
Sorry, everybody.
Yeah. But you know, let's make up an excuse to play this.
A long time ago, someone decided to put stuff in glass bottles. In some of these bottles, they put juice or milk, and that was stupid. Today, only alcohol and a few other products remain in the containers from the gods. It's time for beers and bourbon, because good advice only comes in a bottle.
So here's the question. Do I want to drink Old Forester or Cooper's Craft?
Well, you like the choice. Cooper's last time, right?
I did, like having options. So this is the first moment of show history where two bottles have been on screen at the same time.
Oh, no. I think you've had two before. I mean, we've done 218 of these. We've done more episodes. It used to be close. Now it's not close. We have a higher episode count than Joey Gallo does batting average.
This is true. Yeah, we're coming for you, Tony Gwynn. So, like you said in the onset, I'm going to review our stats, but first, Old Forester was the decision for the record.
All right, so Old Forester for you, and I am having a Busch Light, but it's a tall boy, and I'm only having one.
Jeez.
Because as we talked about before, I'm on the closing end of like a chest infection of some sort. And from the sounds of it, you're just about to start down that road. And it's rocky. Both my boy and I got knocked on our butts a week ago, and he was down and out for several days. I even took a sick day, as I told you, which, you know, that tells me it's rough, because that's not something I'm allowed to do. So
I'm going to make a bold prediction that I wake up tomorrow fine.
I had good and bad days. What you'd want to do, so my ideal thing, Dr. Rob here, is you slam a few brews, or in your case, a couple glasses, then you take NyQuil 30 mils, and then you put that into your body right before you go to bed, sleep like a baby, and then when you wake up, your wife is just upset because you didn't hear anything that occurred during the night. And since you have children, things are always going on.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair,
you'll wake up and be refreshed.
That's normal. I sleep through it already. So, I'm going to be okay. It really just was a very long week at work. We did a lot of cool internal training, which went really well. So I feel like it's just a little worn down that I think can really be solved by a glass of Old Forester. So
yeah,
let's get into it. Rob, you want to get to hot news?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I just closed it too. I know. And you know what the dumb part was? I was just looking at it. I'm like, we'll say it. Hot news is back, everybody. But before that, let's just go to Twitter mentions, because you can always find us at DingersPod on Twitter. I know it's become an even worse landscape than it's ever been before in its life. So we'll see what's up with Twitter long term. But in the meantime, that's going to be the base of which you can find us. Perhaps the podcast will need an email address at some point in the future. Anyway, hot news. Finally, everybody, Nick Solak has been released from the prison that was the Texas Rangers system. He was traded to Cincinnati. I think it was for just cash considerations, which is pretty crummy for Nick Solak. But I'm going to predict this.
Don't call me Brandon Drury, Solak.
Well, I was going to say, I'm going to predict this right now, Ty. Fantasy sleeper hype is going to come all around him once we head into February. Now, do you think he's sleeper hype, legitimate, or a lost cause?
For Solak?
Yeah, numbers were not good last year. And after, I think it was May, he only had like 9 games played or something. Like 9 games and 9 at-bats.
I feel like he could platoon with what's his face. I just had his name and then it left my brain in center field.
Center field?
Yeah, in Cincy. It's a guy that's supposed to be good, but never panned out. I lost it.
I love it. That's I know who you're talking about. Former top 100 prospect who was a shortstop and then got moved around.
I'm gonna look it up. Stall.
Tip of the tongue. I'll just go to the next Texas move and then we can circle back. Jake Odorizzi is now a Ranger and he was traded from Atlanta where Colby Allard will now go. And Colby Allard is going back there. He was a first round pick, I think in 16. And traded in 2021, I believe it was, for RP Martin. So that trade's, you know, whatever. We'll see. Atlanta getting a guy of their own back is interesting to me. I don't know if there's like a pitching coach or someone in the organization who's like, I need more time with him. And then he was traded. And, you know, whenever that offseason bulletin board goes up of guys they want to acquire, obviously Allard was on it. So I got to think there's some usefulness to him. I can't see them just trading away Odorizzi because of money when, you know, Atlanta makes a lot of pretty astute moves anyway. So did you get that Solak comparable?
Great stall. Nick Senzel. So I feel
Senzel.
Like, yeah.
I knew it started with an S.
Tripped up by the fact that they were so close.
They are close.
That's what we're going to go with. But I think.
And both disappointing.
Well, I mean, reality is like they're both going to go out there and play half a season so they can just platoon injury time. Instead of splits like traditional ones.
So yeah, I just think there. Solak, like for everybody out there, we're Dynasty Podcasts, Keeper Redraft, you know, we got you covered. But, Dynasty is our bag. And Nick Solak is fantasy kryptonite because he keeps getting valued and he keeps not being able to put up the numbers that you want. But he has a sample that you can work from that will kill you for years. Because you can see something there if you want to see it. You just have to be, you know, a little bigger picture thinking Nick Solak is like a bench guy at best. He's not an asset you look to acquire this offseason, in my opinion. And a very interesting one, Ty. Okay, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I was scrolling through Twitter earlier and I just want to punch a note because I find it hilarious. It's just like the amount of hype around a guy like Christian Javier, like,
right,
like in a, the lines are like the more homework I do, the more research I do, the more I look into this guy. Like, what did you look at this season? Like, what was
top 100? Yeah, top 100 players. That's pretty much everybody that was on an all-star ballot is pretty much who the masses go to. And I've got a little one for that too because when we talk about players, there's a prospect that I have been infatuated with for 2 years now. This will be my third off season. Of steadily watching and trying to acquire him, who I just saw Baseball America's Jeff Pontus talk about when he was doing an AFL thing. Now, no disrespect to Prospect Jesus, simply stating that
don't
based on
Nick Madrigal.
No. Prospect Jesus, that's Jeff Pontus' Twitter handle. Anyway, it's the simple fact is that they can't discuss everyone all the time. So yes, there will be people that, you know, that I'm ahead on, but it's ahead in the sense that like I'm willing to hold them through the final, you know, whatever two or three leagues of their development. Whereas other people are going to wait and discuss other people who look to have higher ceilings. I might, you know, they're going to see the high K count with the player I'm talking about, and they're going to go the other way on them. Whereas I'm going to say, well, that's something that I think could improve. And if that improves, the rest, you know, the other, that's a five category guy for us.
So speaking of waiting a couple seasons, like what are your thoughts on Houston letting go of their general manager and assistant general manager? Like who wants to go work for that guy?
Like, right. Yeah. Congratulations.
Take me to two World Series and win one of them and bye. Like, yeah, that's the most secure job in Major League Baseball right there, ladies and gentlemen.
Well, I think if you're the owner and you're the one who's like, if that's the case, the owner's making the decision, it might just have to do with the desire to do like an about face on your competitive window. But it doesn't seem like the AL West is the place to do that. And it doesn't seem like now is the time for the Houston Astros team to do it. They are not a veteran laden team. They've got everybody at all points of development in there. They're like this, like the Cardinals, they could continue to be competitive for years to come.
It just
after
seems
the
like
tank.
It just seems like the Art Moreno school of owning teams, right? Like let's overmanage when you're just the money guy, like get out of the way. Let the guys that are baseball guys do their thing. And it doesn't mean Jim Crane can't be a money guy, but like you've got a GM that improved a team incrementally when nobody thought they were going to bounce back. And then they did. And then they got better again. And then they got real good and they're going to be real good next year. So like, I find it so hard to believe that this is a positive move for the Astros, in my opinion, because they got rid of two guys that are very analytical, and it sounds like there's a third shoe to drop. Not that anybody wears three shoes, but you get what I'm saying.
Well, Dusty Baker retirement, I think, would be.
Nope, he's already back. He's already.
Oh, is he confirmed back? Yeah. Oh, geez.
Yeah, there's one more guy that they got.
Okay, that from, I didn't see.
I want to say they got the assistant GM came from the Dodgers. And then there, I forget if the other guy that is still unfired, he's not fired yet, is the baseball analytics guy. He like whatever his title is, the quasi Quantrill pot of whatever money guy.
That's so, an interesting word. Yep.
Yeah. Right. So I don't know what they're doing over there. It just seems weird. Unless they're going to bring Jeff Lednow back.
Well, maybe there are things that are. Obviously there are things happening behind closed doors that are the reason for this, because you can't say it's on-field performance. So
definitely,
whatever they are. But anyway, a team that always does weird things in the offseason, and you know, Ty, this is what did we say before? This was our fourth offseason or fifth offseason now that we have identified, and we did it early on, was when a team acquires players, you look out for that player, and Tampa Bay did it. They picked out of the Pirates' pocket, which, you know, we know about the Glasnow trade that has occurred. Is that what we call it? The Glasnow Meadows trade? I know Meadows is not there anymore. Anyway, right-handed pitcher Jack Hartman, former Pittsburgh Pirate, Jack Hartman, who he's now in Tampa Bay for J-Man Choi. And Choi, interesting, he's an OBP guy, first baseman. I think next year it's easy to just pencil him in for more than 113 games, which is what he played last year. And he had runs and RBIs in the 50s. I think it was 52 runs, 58 RBIs, or vice versa, and 13 dingers. I mean, if we want to just play the bounce that up a little bit game, this is potential 70 run, 70 RBI guy with high teens home run potential. Now, that, I'm not getting crazy in saying that. I'm thinking that's just like if you gave him another 30 games and he still had that same ebb and flow. But I don't know what he was, if he was taken out early. You know what I mean? Like if he lost at bats that he could have back. So I'm more interested in what Choi's going to be as an undervalued first baseman in Pittsburgh. Got to see what the Pirates or lineup is going to look like. Cause I mean, last year in April, oh my God, that was terrible, but it should be a little better with a guy like Choi, OBP guy too. Right. That's why he's got the runs. He's on base. But Hartman, that's the guy that we're going to need to find out a little bit more about, because Tampa Bay doesn't just acquire players for the sake of getting a deal done. You can talk to Randy Arozarena and other such
drafted players. 108 out of App State in the 2020 draft. So, you know, 2020 was a bit of an anomaly, right? That's a, that's your first pointer. Upper velos north of 96. So we've got some velocity, which will help replace Nick Anderson, who signed with the Braves today. Classic Alex Anthopoulos side note. Draft an injury guy on the way back that has massive upside.
And included in his contract is a triple A assignment, which is great. I think that's I don't know if that's a new thing. It's new to me to hear that when a player signs for under a mil, they also have the, like they, he's got a base salary next year of 180 grand. If he gets sent to the minors, which I guess might be the initial idea, is that he'll start there and then get promoted. But I mean, what a, like 29 other teams should have been looking to sign him for that.
Yeah. I mean, it's nothing, right? And that's what I'm saying. Like whatever. And Alex Anthopoulos is selling these guys, selling them something that we don't know about. It's incredible. So I find
real estate. Maybe it's real estate in Wrexham.
Maybe. Yeah. They know something. They've got a formula in Atlanta right now because they're like versus the market. They are dominating. There's no arguments on that, but Hartman looks like there's some upside here. Classic Tampa Bay move. I'm intrigued. I'm going to be buying based on history. The upside of the arm is there. I'm going to say this one is a blind leap of faith for me. I will go find me some Jack Hartman based on velo, based on Tampa Bay, turning him into a dominant reliever.
I mean, the most recent case, and we talk about it ad nauseum, is Drew Rasmussen. You know, a guy that was supposed to be something, looked like he was almost a lost cause, goes to Tampa Bay, and now look at the situation, right? We're looking at a legit starter, fantasy relevant guy. So, all right, Ty, we're going to go through our rosters from our 5x5 from the Arizona Fall League. Just so everybody knows, that's like where They call it like a graduating school, but I mean, we know lots of guys that go to it that don't end up the next year up in MLB, but some do. Some fun, exciting guys do. And of the MLB.com's top 100 prospects, there were 16 that were in the fall league. I'm just going to quickly rhyme them off, and then we can switch over to talk about our roster side. Because we didn't draft all these guys, but we did draft some. Jordan Walker was there of the Cardinals, Jordan Lawler of the D-backs, Noelly Marte of the Reds, Henry Davis of the Pirates, Robert Hassel III now of the Nationals, Zach Veen of the Rockies, Jason Dominguez of the Yankees, Quinn Priester of the Pirates, thank you, Brennan Davis of the Cubs, Mason Wynn of the Cardinals, that's right, the 100-mile-per-hour shortstop, Andy Paez of the Dodgers, Matt McClain of the Reds, Jackson Merrill, shortstop with the Padres, Tink Hentz, pitcher with the Cardinals, Nick Gonzalez, second baseman with the Pirates, who maybe he'll be with J-Man Choi next year.
Sorry, go ahead.
And Zach Geloff.
G-Loff,
baby.
Yeah, so I jumped the gun a little bit there, but I've already figured out my nickname for Andy Pages.
Okay.
Papayas.
Okay. I thought you were going to say turn the Paez.
No.
Turn the Pages.
No. Papayas. Because you said it.
Okay.
Paez, which I believe is maybe correctly pronounced.
I think it is. Yeah.
We have a history of getting these right. So.
Oh, I'm do put we?
Faith in you. That's what we got here. So, Papayas.
That's why I often include the spelling of the name if I'm not sure.
Because now we can do like clips and do instead of like whammy. We can do Papayas every time he hits home run.
Well, my RP selection, he's his own thing. But anyway, so Ty, why don't you tell everybody your Ty's Two Early Toddlers from the last one? Just do a recap of your dudes. I'll recap mine, and then we'll stay the results, and then we can dive in because it'll just be prospects after that.
Absolutely. My roster, catcher, Dylan Dingler, first base, Colt Keith, second base, Nick Gonzalez, which hurt so bad to do. Jordan Walker played the hot corner. Matt McClain at shortstop. Zach Veen in the outfields. Andy Papayas in the outfield. Heston Kerstad in the outfield on the arms side. Three starters. Tink Hentz, Kumar Rocker, Will Bednar, and my reliever / starter / converted, Sandy Gaston.
Yeah. Which, I mean, sounds good on paper. They all do. But the end results, when we dive in here, it's so different. So I went, neither of us took the top rated catcher in Henry Davis. I went with Joe Mack as my catcher out of Miami. And then I got Jose Salas, who's shortstop. But I threw him over to first base. Miami guy, Nick York of the Red Sox, my second baseman, Noelly Marte with Cincinnati, who's shortstop. Marte is third base. Jordan Lawler is my shortstop. Then I went with Mason Auer of Tampa Bay in the outfield, along with Johan Rojas, which we'll get to it. I am happy about that one. The Phillies outfielder, Lawrence Butler, baby, was my other guy from Oakland. And then my three pitchers, I went Quinn Priester with the Pirates. I think it's Ken Wisenhunt. I think that's the correct. It's probably not Ken.
Definitely not.
Yeah. But anyway, Wisenhunt with San Francisco, which in the end, I mean, I don't think he pitched much at all. And then Christian Roja, I'm just adding that, with the Reds. And then I had my relief pitcher, Brian Woo, like I said, I'll spell it if I'm not, if I'm screwing with everybody.
Howard on Wisenhunt. You're good.
Thank you. Oh, nice. Wiz and apostrophe and Hunt.
Middle name end.
Wiz. You can buy vegetarian chicken strips because we serve them, at the university I work at. It's an item that we do. Hold on here. But it says it's called chicken strips, but it's chick, like a chick, apostrophe N strips. And I said to someone, that is way too close to saying chicken, that is going to confuse the crap out of a casual observer. And then if they don't quite get it, they're going to be, kind of ticked about it. And it
sounds like a really in poor taste. It sounds like a highway gentleman's club.
Chicken strips. If it's by an airport.
Yeah, sure. That's what I'm getting at. Like
chicken strips.
It just seems off here. I'm sorry.
But anyway, off topic there, but it is a good product. And if you find it out there, go ahead and try yourself some chicken strips. Okay. So Ty, we did 5x5 runs, RBIs, home runs, stolen base average, wins, saves, strikeouts, ERA, and whip. And I will say off the top, the wins are a little harder to come by here in the AFL. You're not sending guys out for six innings. The saves very random, but we wanted to just go old school 5x5. So we didn't end up with any saves. So there is one category missing, but Ty, as the victor, why don't you just go ahead and spill the beans?
Yep. I got the W done on the back of my absolutely booming.
Congratulations.
Outfield. I mean, yeah. I stacked the outfield. I mean, that was my key to victory. I got 15 home runs from my outfield, and or third baseman, I guess, if you loop him in, Jordan Walker. But, you know, 5 home runs for Kjerstad, 5 home runs for Papayas, 5 home runs for Jordan Walker. That's going to get me going. Nick Gonzalez had 3 home runs, hit 238. The issue for him, 15 strikeouts and 63 at-bats, woof. In the fall league, I don't like that, because that indicates for me problems coming, which I've been flagging for everybody for a couple years now. But it got me the W, which is key here, because those 3 home runs put me ahead. But I had 102 runs. I had 91 RBIs, 23 home runs. Robbie had 87 runs, 84 RBIs, and 15 home runs. But as expected, Robbie did win stolen bases with 37.
Yes!
I somehow managed to get 30, which I'm shocked by. That's more than like any of my fantasy teams had this season.
that was like some crazy Zach Veen.
I'm completely serious about that statement.
Yeah. So on your stolen base front, because like the way you put your roster together, we just for reference for everybody, we waited until the AFL was almost over to draft, but we also did not follow the AFL for this purpose. That it's more enjoyable for us to get a couple dingers episodes out of this and do the work and enjoy the fall league for what it is, which is a showcase for some players. It's also an opportunity to do a few deep dives on some guys we don't know about. That's what, you know, this particular episode's about. But I mean, you had Zach Veen flying out of the gates early. I remember hearing he had a lot of stolen bases early, and I thought, oh, well, that's, you know, good for him, because he's one of those guys who I said, I think the hype is going to be so high on him, he's never going to meet expectations. And I feel bad because he's a high school drafted kid. Well, now he's in the fall league, you know, whatever, 18 months after his draft.
Might see Zach Veen next year. Like,
oh, depending on Colorado's legitimacy for competitiveness, if they assign him to AAA, to start the year, which when you go to the fall league, you're predominantly playing against guys of that caliber, right? You're not getting the old guys who are, you know, fringe major leaguers or guys who are trying to come back from injury or whatever, but you're getting like the up and comers, the pitchers with that stuff and blah, blah, blah. It makes sense that you might assign him there. Yeah, absolutely. He could come up, but a .333 batting average for him is excellent. 10 RBIs, only the single dinger, but that's okay. 15 runs. You got a guy who smoked 4 out of 5 categories. Like, he might be, I mean, I'm looking, Jordan Walker's right there too. You have a few guys who genuinely got you in like high above me in the offensive, but at the same time, they were the best players in the fall league. Yeah. You know, Jordan Walker, Zach Veen, stat lines, you know, results based. And then Paellas had 20 runs, 14 RBIs, and a .296 average. Excellent. Like, yeah, I mean, even Heston Kjerstad, right? Heston Kjerstad, who we said when we were discussing, missed a ton of time, 13 runs, 17 RBIs, 5 dingers, and a .357 average. Oh, man. Baltimore's got to be pumped.
Well, we've been saying this for a year and a half now, Robbie. Like, I know I'm fully in, and I'm pretty sure you are too. Like, we're all in on Baltimore's front office. Like, they're doing great things. And the Kjerstad pick is a perfect example. Like, that was a nobody's pick. And look what we got here, right? Like,
that pick set up their draft to have a great class. The fact that it looks like Kjerstad is also going to be an MLB-er and from the looks of it, an impactful one for fantasy purposes. That's a great thing here. But let's talk about where. Oh yeah, is he a strict center fielder?
He's been playing. Well, he's been playing center field.
Great. Well, let's talk about something that makes me a bit happy, which is your crappy pitching. So your guy, I mean, both of our ERAs were over 7, just so we're clear with everybody here on this. Your highest pitching total was 14 innings, and that was for Rocker, which is great because that's what he was there to do as far as we, you know, were concerned. So he got those innings in, and your total for your team was 33, but none of it was good.
I think that's here's the one thing I'm gonna say is that the average against was strong, so I had some control issues on my team. If you look at the walks, Sandy Gaston in 8 innings had 15.
Look at Rocker. Look at
Kumar Rocker in 14 innings had 12. But look, the batting average against Robbie, and this is what I said when I drafted this team, like there's some risk here, but the upside's off the charts. Batting average for Tink Hentz was 130. Batting average against Kumar Rocker was 231. Really, the only guy that got hit was Bednar. But you know, we've already talked about three, what Bednar can and cannot be.
3 1/3 innings too, right, Ty? Like that's you know, correct. You can overcome that with another 3 1/3 where you don't give up.
Yeah,
a bunch of hits.
Well, and the same with Gaston, right? 8 innings, 9 hits, 15 walks. Like, you're going to have a tough time keeping the batting average down with the bases loaded, right? So, like, I'm still excited because on the flip side, like, in those 8 innings with complete chaos, with probably one of the worst whips in the Arizona Fall League, like, he still struck out a handful of guys. Kumar Rocker struck out 18 in the 14 innings. So, like, there's lots here. There's lots of upside, and that's what I drafted. I was like, listen, I'm going to take my guys here. I mean, that's part of what we're doing. And I stand by all of these guys. Like, Bednar is the one I'm most concerned with of the four. I think the other three have pretty significant upside for me.
Yeah. We'll switch now over to my side here because you talked about, you know, trouble with the whip. And Christian Roa had the second highest whip at 3. And there was, I think, one pitcher who had an 8, which we can get to there. But very similar, 368 batting average against for him. Just crushed. Only 9 Ks in – or sorry, he, sorry, I should rephrase. He had 9 Ks, only 8 innings pitched, but 10 walks. I also had a 10-walk man in Quinn Priester. But Priester at least pitched 23 innings for me. But 16 earned runs in that same time, 22 Ks. But the guy for me, my pitching MVP here, is Wu. By the way, Seattle. That's a Seattle player. Don't remember the draft year for him right now, 19 or 20.
DePoto.
That's my DePoto guy.
We need like a DePoto siren. Like I'm going to
I'd love that. I would sync that up with a, like, you know, with Budweiser for hockey. You can have it. So, like, your team scores a goal, and I did do that here in the murder.
We need, like, a Bill Nye the Science Guy, except with DePoto's head spinning.
I'm sure there's something on Amazon. Anyway, I
still think we can do that.
So, Wu had a .84 ERA in 10 2/3 innings, which is excellent. He also had 16 strikeouts, 4 walks. Not perfect, but that's fine. And the batting average against was 122. So I'm considering Wu a win. Now, he was the least hyped, least liked, least whatever of the four pitchers I had. At the end of the day, that's the one that, you know, was able to help me the most. On the hitting side, my catcher, Joe Mack, did catcher things, you know. And what did he have? 61 at-bats. He had 11 runs, 4 home runs, 7 RBIs, and a .230 average. No qualms with that for a catcher. Salas was pretty average. 4 stolen bases was kind of his highlight. And then you get into Nick York, great fall league for Nick York, .342 average, 18 runs, 18 RBIs. Power was, you know, whatever, 2. Stolen base was 1. But let's look at his body of work here in 76 at bats. Nick York did damage. Novelli Marte was kind of on the other end, a lot of hype and expectations, .217 average. Only 2 dingers, 10 runs, 9 RBIs, and he had 69 at-bats. So it's very similar playing time to York. Results completely different. But I guess it's kind of what you go into the fall league wanting the guys to do. So Jordan Lawler, on the other hand, just excelled. Nothing was over the moon, but he did not fail. And that's why I guess I'm saying he excelled for what is he, a 20-year-old guy right now? 9 runs, 2 home runs, 7 RBIs, 4 stolen bases. But now we can get into a guy that was looking good earlier on, and then I don't know that he faded down the stretch, but just the average dipped. And that's Mason Hour with Tampa Bay, who, again, off the radar guy, but he ended up with 17 runs, 13 RBIs, 3 dingers, and 8 stolen bases, but a .230 average hurts him. And then Johan Rojas, .310 average, 13 stolen bases. That's a big thing for him. No power out of the guy, 10 runs, 7 RBIs. Fantasy asset? I don't know. I'm going to say no, a peripheral guy to add if you have a big enough, deep enough roster, but you're going to need somebody. Like, he can't be a defense first guy. That's just not going to play. And that average, like right now, the 310 average in the fall league is a pinnacle for him. It's not the baseline of expectation, especially as he gets up. Then the final guy here is Lawrence Butler with Oakland, who I loved last year, and he was in the fall league, and I was very excited about that last year. He goes back this year, and he did all right. 250 average, 6 stolen bases, 16 RBIs, which was the high stat number for him, 2 dingers and 7 runs. So 7 runs isn't great, but that happens, I guess, when you're expecting other people to bring in. And what do you have? 3 doubles and a triple out of that. So run total low, but he also had 15 walks. And of these guys, Ty, they all did pretty well with walks. You know, York had 12, Marte had 12, Lawler had 11, 7 for Auer, Rojas had 8, even Mack had 10 walks. So an OBP league, Joe Mack, after this AFL, looking like he could be a good fantasy asset as opposed to one of those catchers who you just pick up off the waiver wire.
Yeah, I mean, I think the offensive upside is there. I think the question with Mack in a lot of cases is, will he be a catcher? Will he stick? Or is he going to be a guy that gets moved off? And I mean, that's, I think everybody, when he was drafted, recognizes the potential to be a fantasy juggernaut. So I like to pick in life. I don't like to pick for the purposes of beating me because it didn't work. but, you know, if you look on the other side, for me, Dylan Dingler, really interesting. A wicked 8 at-bats, 4 hits. 4 walks.
Wicked.
Just absolutely stud. 692 OBP, OPS of 1192, right? I mean, not much more you can do in 8 at bats, but I think it's interesting. The 2 Detroit guys I have on my roster both had great fall leagues. I mean, Dingler obviously was there in a more limited basis, but if you look at Cole Keith, like 15 walks, 16 strikeouts in 58 at bats is okay. For a guy of his pop and upside, he had 2 home runs, 9 RBIs, 15 runs, hit 328. So that's one guy I talked about last week. OBP was strong at 447, as you can see from the stats, 930 OPS. So a guy that still not everybody's awake on. Some people are starting to wake up on in the fall league here. I've seen his name thrown around more in the last couple of weeks than I have in the previous 2 years combined since he was drafted. So I think if you're not into the Colt Keith action, you've got exactly like 45 minutes before the value starts to go up on him.
Yeah, really league dependent on whether he will be rostered or not. And I mean, like right now we're in a period of time where a lot of fantasy leagues are dormant and, you know, GMs are deciding whether they're going to return or not, and commissioners are asking for money for next year so that we can really start to get things amped up into December. And depending on your league and how you know how it's run, or how you yourself run it, if you're the commissioner, November is such a tough time because a lot of people feel overwhelmed at what occurred within their fantasy seasons, and they either are excited and looking to add leagues, so they're like really eager and ready to go and are pushing you to move, or no one wants to talk about it and they're, you know, knee deep into football, you know, CFL for most, maybe a few NFL fans out there. But basically you have this need where the fall league is perfect because we can love it and take all this great information out of it. Then the Rule 5 draft happens and a lot of fantasy leagues are just starting to kind of, you know, churn up at that point in time and people don't pay attention to it. There's a ton of talent that's available right now, but guys like Keith are going to get scooped up because those names are going to float to the top of, you know, not lists, but they're going to start to be new names on lists, or they're going to be guys to watch, or players to this or players to that. So I think he's a good addition, and I'm doing 5 guys that are kind of like within top 30s on systems, like, but not, yeah, but not top 5 guys. And I'm doing that over on RobbieBaseball.com. And Detroit, I think, is the team I just was going through names with. And I'm like, Keith is absolutely a name that needs to be on that list.
I agree. So he's not on enough lists. That's the point. So, Robbie, I think, you know, we've discussed, like, how bad I got you.
Come
by,
on, 5-4.
The one category that I won by. Frankly, if you look back in our fantasy matchups, almost all of our recent matchups have been very close in that manner. whether you were victorious or I was, a lot of our head-to-heads have been one, maybe two categories of late. So let's keep that trend alive. It makes for good fantasy baseball. Nobody wants to see absolute whoopings. It makes it real boring. But let's talk categories. Let's talk about some of the success and some of the highlights of some of these categories. Let's start on the pitching side. And let's talk, one of the things that I always like to do looking for breakouts, Robbie, is I look at innings pitched. It's one of the most important things that I look for on the pitcher side, because it tells me they're either A, working on something, right? They're out there to fix a pitch, or the organization's looking to stretch them back. So if you look at guys coming off of injury or guys that came off of down seasons, they're ramping up the arm volume for the purposes of stretching it out the following season, right? So top of this list, there's a couple interesting names. Connor Thomas, Quinn Priester are right near the top. I'll be 100% frank. I have no idea who this Connor Skoyak is, Van Skoyak. So I'm going to do a little more homework on him. But he logged the most innings at 26, started seven of those games in his seven appearances, but gave up some damage. It wasn't great. Batting average was high. So I'm going to move past him for now. Connor Thomas is a really interesting one. Where are you at on Connor Thomas, Rob? I know you've mentioned him earlier before we started, and I'd love to get your thoughts on where you have Connor Thomas.
So he is moving up the list here, but I'm going to go really quickly to Connor Van Skoyak. Okay. Oh, man. Okay. The 22, just because I had it up, 22 years old with the Angels. He finished last year at A ball. Yeah, I was going to say that's already a kicker for you. So it wasn't a case of this guy, you know, necessarily needed to come in and do anything. He had 120 innings pitched. So this was just, you know, more fuel for that purpose. 11-5 year last year, 4.28 ERA. And in those 120 innings pitched, oops. Oh, don't do that. Technology. Oh no, where did my strikeouts just go? 140 Ks, Ty. So there we go. So on the year, this is a guy who's got a really solid K to 9, 10.5. Whip was 1.18. All those signs are good, but we've got a 22-year-old in A ball, and that's not what we want. He's old for the age, so we need to see that double A assignment for next year. But the fact that he came out and just pitched a bunch, and like you said, it wasn't all good. 7.62 ERA. I think he also had four losses. Yeah, he did. Four losses. So you start the game and you bury your team. But we'll see what's up with him. Definitely I would call him more of a waiver wire, depending on your league. Yeah. Like, do not go out and get Skoyak.
Yeah, Skoyak.
Thank you. Thinking to yourself, here is my ace in the hole. He's kind of like a final dude. But yeah. Connor Thomas, on the other hand, of Los Cardinals, old for the age to be up here, 24. You know, certainly not that highly touted guy. Where was he drafted here? Fifth round in 19. Okay. So he's already been at AAA, was back this year. I don't know if this was just like throwing a depth piece up. It's nice that he had this line, but I don't want anyone out there to go thinking, okay, the guy just, you know, 1.75 ERA and 25 2/3 innings at the fall league and had a pretty good K to nine. I'm not giving that any dominance, because when you just very quickly go back and look, you want to find dominant ERA lines at levels. I don't see a single level where his ERA was below 3.10. And that was at AAA in 2021. Now that's a great spot to have it, right? That's a great, certainly a great spot to have it. But then he repeated this year, 5.47 ERA. So
for me, it just profiles reliever, like low leverage. Like, that's what I see there.
Yeah, and he didn't have the K per nine this year either. In 135 innings, he had 110. So I'm just going to say he's someone that you watch and you're happy that he had a good league, but you're not going to go out and get him. Somebody who was a little further down at 23 innings, more interesting, is Oakland's Ryan Cusick, who came over in the Matt Olson deal. The ERA was not good, 6.26, but there are things that you can like about Cusick, including the fact that Oakland sent him here, because Oakland has a way of making starters fantasy relevant for us, whether that's SP5 streamer types or the Frankie Montases of the world, who, as I've stated he is dead to me for fantasy purposes moving forward. But there was a time that he wasn't, and maybe Ryan Cusick could be one of those guys for me, right? We've all loved Chris Bassett and hated Chris Bassett and Sean Manaea and the rest, right? We know that Oakland has talented arms, and seeing one up here getting the innings, that's a good thing. That's kind of how I'm taking that one. I don't like the line, but I like the fact that he was continued to be put out, much like Quinn Priester. He had 23 innings, like I mentioned him before. Glad to see that Pittsburgh was pushing him. I don't know what this means for next year for him, though.
Yeah, I mean, there's really only a handful of notable inning count storylines. For me, it's notable to see the guys on the top end, right? But I think that's as far as I want to get. I want to turn our attention now to strikeouts, because I think this is one that I think we can draw a little bit of value out of on top of that. And, you know, if we look at the leaders there, again, Connor Thomas is at the top, Ryan Cusick's right there. Emmett Sheehan, which, you know, I think for most people, the best pitcher in the fall league from a clout perspective. I think this is an arm that people are high on. Quinn Priester's got to be on that list as well. And there's a handful of guys here with upside, but you know, we have numbers here, 24 strikeouts. The whip was sub one, Robbie, which I know you like on Emmett Sheehan there, 3.54 in 20 innings. You know, really didn't have anything alarming. Batting average against was 169, which is obviously pretty great. But that's one just to note. If you're not aware of him, you need to be paying a little more attention. Evan Reifert's another guy that's worth a look. 22 strikeouts in here. Get me here, Robbie. 22 strikeouts in 10.2 innings. So,
yeah.
Hello. Whip, 3.8. Sorry. So, if he doesn't have your attention yet, he should. Profiles a little bit as a leverage guy. Allowed exactly zero hits, zero earned runs, zero home runs. Just four walks, batting average of zero against. So he threw a no-no across the several innings that he threw. 10.2. He basically threw a full no-no during
at his appearance,
which is what you like to see from your relievers. I think that's where he's going to probably end up. There's a chance they want to stretch him out a little bit, but we'll see. I mean, well, how can you not be excited about that line to put in a bullpen? So some there. If we start to get down, we get a little more ambiguous, but I know you've highlighted a couple here, Robbie.
Just high K to nine. That's all these guys are that I did. So I'll go from the bottom here on it. So 8 1/3 innings pitched, Daniel Robert had 15 Ks, 9 2/3 Mason Hickman, 15 Ks, Chandler Joswiak. Sorry.
Nailed it.
15 Ks and 10 innings for him. Matt Rumpenthal, 15 Ks and 10 1/3. And of the names I just announced, Robert still had a 9.72 ERA. Rumpenthal with his 10 1/3 had a .87 ERA, .68 whip. So he kept it under control. So that's a good name to think of. That is Matt Rumpenthal. We will follow up on that. Calvin Kakiris, 16 Ks and 10 1/3, but a 2 whip and a 7.84 ERA. So not ideal there. And did you go through? No. So John Olson had 17 Ks and 13 2/3. Alec Jacob, 17 Ks and 12 2/3. Yorlin Calderon, 17 Ks and 12 2/3. Nolan Hoffman, 12 1/3 innings, 17 Ks. And then this guy, Francisco Morales. One win.
Morales? Yeah, it's an M.
Jeez, I am aging poorly. Franklin Morales, one win, zero losses, zero earned runs, 17 Ks, 1.03 whip, two saves, 10 2/3 innings. And the two saves even puts them in second place or third place maybe overall, because there were only, I think there were five guys who had two saves and one or two that had three. So Morales is somebody who we are going to need to hear Morales about.
No. Okay. I'm not allowing it.
Still need to hear more about the player. Maybe not what I did there. I'll kind of have a little look at him if you want to transition. I don't know if we need to do any more pitching stuff. From the get-go, was not a exciting class. We talked about Wu already. That was my guy that I was excited about. Mm-hmm. And outside of him and Morales.
Yeah, the only other one I was going to touch on was Game Started. I think this is always interesting as a point just to look for. Very similar to the innings pitched. It's just something to see who got run out. It's going to be a lot of the guys we've already mentioned. Mason Miller is another guy that's going to sneak his way in there. Chase Selesky had six starts. Now, like we'll have a variety of innings there. But any the guys that went out there first, the only real notable ERAs were the aforementioned Connor Thomas, Mason Miller with a 3.24 with a 0.78 whip. These are things we like to see. The K to nine ratio was good for Miller, 20 strikeouts in 16 innings. You know, the rest of the guys we've kind of touched on. I'm just going to do a quick double check. I don't really see anybody else worth mentioning, but that's the stuff that I like to look for in these, Robbie, is I'm looking immediately for who are the guys that are getting attention from their organization to the point that they're being asked to get a certain amount of innings during this experience. So jumping to the hitter side with the beautiful conditional formatting that I added to our Excel spreadsheet. Shout out to Excel and your formatting skills. Let's go. Let's talk about runs. We've touched on it a little bit. Just in terms of, you know, who's there and some of the elite ones. Edward Julian is leading the way at 24 runs. He had 70 at bats, which is a pretty solid number. What do you got on this Julian character, Robbie? I am a little green here on this one. 400 batting average is also going to be near the top of that list for at bats played. OPS 1249 did manage to smack five bombs in that window as well. So this line is fantastic. Robbie is on mute, ladies and gentlemen. Let's bring him back here into the studio.
Oh man, muting myself. What I was saying was I'm trying to figure out Francisco Morales' home. The only one that comes up is Philadelphia Philly pitcher Franklin Morales.
Yeah, that's 20, who it is.
Is it age 22? He doesn't 100%. Have a fall league. But he doesn't have a fall league stat line on Baseball Reference, which was the second place I went to try to confirm his line.
No, that's definitely him. Because yeah? He has two options burned already. So like it was a weird one. Like it's one of those guys that they're either showcasing to trade off of the 40 man or they're trying to decide where they want him on the 40 man at all. Right. So that's kind of the issue that they're addressing there. So I think that's a guy that, you know, maybe doesn't fit their timeline for their organization and they want to see if they can get, you know, an alternative arm, or they said, hey, go figure out how to throw this pitch or you're gone. And that's the scenario that they were putting them in.
Okay. So thank you for clearing that up because I said his name, I've been looking for him. And I'm like, no, it can't be that guy. No, it can't be that guy. So anyway, Eduardo Julian Ty. Definitely not pronouncing it right. Please don't look him up. Ethnicity. Take a guess.
It's French.
Oh, F off. You looked.
What do you mean? His last name's Julian. Like, that's a very French spelt name.
Oh, my God. He
totally we are Canadian. Looked. We do have he a good chunk looked. Of our country that's French.
You. No one would ever guess.
I'm a Montreal Canadiens fan, and no. We have lots of guys that have been named Julian, ugh. Including a head coach. So,
Julian. Okay, no, that's it. You know what? No bueno. No one would ever pick a baseball prospect. Be like, you know what? That sounds like a French Canadian name. If I'm being honest with you, no one would say that. His name could be Tabernak, and you'd be like, no, I don't think that. I think he's from Puerto Rico.
Anyway.
Round of the 2017 MLB June draft. He's still a Philly, right? Wichita, Fort Myers. Yeah, it's Philly still. No trades.
Sorry, I actually couldn't hear you because it's
fine. Listeners heard me. So this year he batted 300 AA. He is 23 years old. So this folly falls perfect for him, but he had a full season tie, 508 plate appearances. Plus another 96. So I think this was like a, are we putting him on the 40 man or not, as you alluded to? And why wouldn't you? You know, 300 hitter, 440 OBP. Holy crap. This is just an OBP machine. 98 walks, which is not even a career high. Sorry, he's with Minnesota. 98 walks, not even a career high, because he had 110 in the previous year. So, if you're an OBP league, how in the hell you can't find a spot? Even I would argue on a 10-man minors, a 20-plus team league where you're going to go 200-plus prospects, he should be prospect 190 to 200 picked up in that league after this fall league. Because one thing we one thing we know about Minnesota is they'll bring up the prospects. They're not suppressing guys where you're, you know, aching for them to come up. And he's also not a teenager. If he succeeds next year with a promotion to AAA, which is obviously where he should start next year, there's no reason why you wouldn't bring him up.
Can you imagine the type of name that somebody in the Tampa Bay locker room would call him if they got traded there? Some sort of slapdick prospect right there.
He's also a ginger, and I don't mean that in any negative way. It's just that if you were to look at this name outside of Utah, who apparently knows all the French names, you would say, oh, that guy is, you know, Latin America. Well,
I
mean,
you set it up so like you're not going to get this. So I put some extra thought into it. But once I did, like, there was only a handful of options.
Like, the picture of him is just, it's just looks like, you know, he's ready to go play hockey.
And he's Canadian. I didn't know that.
Yeah. And drafted in the 37th round and stuck it out as a high school kid. So props to get there. As a second baseman, expectations are relatively low. Middle infielder, we know Minnesota's really good at having players get injured, and then they bring up other guys. Maybe we could see him up next year. If you're looking for a shot in the dark prospect out of here, this is not a bad one, especially after this fall league.
Late bloomer. I like this one.
Yeah.
This might be a new pony. But yeah, let's get into that. So runs, just going down the list, there's a couple of interesting names here, Robbie. We've got Austin Martin, who had a very successful fall league.
Another Minnesota player, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, the big thing for me with Martin is always going to be the pop. He had 945 OPS, but only the single home run.
Yeah.
Lots of hits, 30. Might be one of the leaders, if not the leader at 30. So that's definitely going to be there. But then, you know, a little further down, you already mentioned on the runs for Papayas, Nick York is right there. This list is all the guys we want to focus on. Mason Auer, Jordan Walker. These are the top of the lineup guys. So naturally, runs are going to accumulate a little bit here. Zach Veen was in there. Reese Hines, Colt Keith, Jackson Merrill.
Well, even Ronnie Simone. Even Ronnie Simone with Tampa Bay is a name that's been getting some mention lately, and a 325 average for him, ton of RBIs, right? He had, 24 RBIs? That's a good fall league. That's a good – and I think he was a J2 guy in, 18, something like that. So he's still young.
Yeah, I mean, the list is strong. Like, these are the things we're looking for. Like, even, you know, even a guy like Tyler Hardman had a really good spring hit, 325. But, you know, like, those are the kind of guys that – you know, walk through at 255 across a couple levels in the Yankee system. Real kind of notable if you look at Hardman's year. One of the things that'll probably go unnoticed on a lot of centers, he hit 22 home runs at high A. Really cup of coffee at double A. Like, this is a guy to maybe take a peek at heading into this season pre-breakout, right? Like, you don't usually see a lot of 22 plus home runs at A or below. So we're always watching when we see that. That's a good job.
It's rare, but the Yankees had a guy just like this last year that they released who ended up in Oakland. Everybody ready? Say it with me. Dermis Garcia ended up playing in Oakland. Let's watch and see what happens with Hardman. Because this is it, right? You've got a power early guy is promising if they can control the Ks. And Lawrence Butler is a power early in his career guy who needs to control the Ks to become a completed player. If that's the same key, maybe they're like we kind of were discussing this beforehand a little bit about the 40-man roster jumble that's going to come up. Hardman might be one of those guys with the Yankees. I don't know off the top of my head, looking to see what he's got left or not, but this could be one of the reasons why. We saw Elijah Dunham come up with the Yankees, who was drafted, I think, in 19. And he went up into the fall league last year, and that's how he got on my radar. And I watched him all year. I was wanting the breakout, didn't get the breakout, but more importantly, did not get massive regression. And that's where, you know, maybe with Hardman next year, we'll see what's up with him. So, but are you looking here at RBI leaders now, Ty?
I am, Robbie. Why don't you run through it?
Sure. So we had Ronnie Simone, who I did mention. He ended up with the most by 6.24. Then Nick York. I got to figure out, because it's not Ed Ward. It's like Ed Orb Julien, because he's French. So, but anyway,
it might be like Eddard, like Eddard Stark from Game of Thrones.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Whatever, maybe, man.
You don't like that?
No, I don't. It's not French. Anyway, then we have Heston Kjerstad, Cal. I'm just angry about you guessing French. Cal Conley, Jordan Walker, Stephen Scott, Jose Ramos, good name to see up. Lawrence Butler was 16, and then it's 15 and under for the rest of the dudes. Will Wagner, Xavier Warren, and then Tyler Hardman, who we previously mentioned. This you know, list has some more guys, Cal Connolly amongst them, Julien as well, who are not highly sought after at this moment, but names to consider. I mean Ronnie Simon, I got to check on Fantrax. One of the things that's screwed me up a bit this off season with Fantrax is, until you renew your league with them, they're not counting the players that are on your dynasty rosters as being rostered in overall, and they haven't ended all of the leagues from the previous year. So what I'm saying is that if, let's say, there were 100,000 different Fantrax leagues, and I don't know, 80,000 of them were redraft, they're still counting the rostered percentage of 80,000 of those leagues right now, even though the season's over, and they won't start to eliminate those until they wipe them all out and you renew your league, or, you know, end it, quit it, whatever you do. So it's hard to get an accurate depiction of the rostered percentage of players in leagues, because, like, I'm just going to look up Ronnie Simon here, which is what I was trying to do before. But it doesn't give you a real, you know, honest number. Cause usually if a league says 20% rostered, that's a sign that they're rostered in all of the dynasty leagues that you would play in. And Simon is rostered in 0%. So I can't really help us much on that one, Ty. I'm going to look at the dynasty leagues that we're in. So I'm in a 30 teamer, our listener league, a 24 teamer, and a 20 team league. He's available in all of those leagues. And some of them have 50 man minors.
Well, I mean, this is a guy that fits the category we like to pay attention to, which is traded to the Tampa Bay Rays, right? So fits the auto acquire mentality that
was he traded? Was he an Arizona Diamondback that was traded?
He was, yes.
Okay.
I don't know who he got traded for. We'll have to do a little digging on that one.
But, yeah, okay. I vaguely remember that now.
But yeah, I mean, there's some home run upside. In 21, he had 17. Last year, he had 22, right? So this is not a nobody.
Right direction, yep.
Yep, and I mean, the OPS is strong. Slug's good. The on-base percentage is not going to be your friend here. It's okay. It's just not elite. So something to note there. Jumping into your favorite stat, Robbie, stolen bases. Yeah. We already talked about Zach Veen. You already talked about Danny Rojas, Johan Rojas. This is a guy that had 13, hit 310. That's an interesting category. We talked about Austin Martin and Cal Connolly already. We briefly talked about Samad Taylor, who woof 152 batting average. Not what we're looking for.
But look at the rest. Like, if you, sorry, Ty, but if you take away the fact that he had a 152 average, he still somehow carved out 9 stolen bases, 14 runs, and 10 RBIs. So he was being productive, but not getting on base, or sorry, not getting hits, I should say.
I'm going to have a small disagreement on that, because he struggled 26 times in 66 at bats. He's just real fast. Right. So Samad Taylor has upside. Like,
he's not with his bat, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, and that's been the thing with Samad Taylor. Like, the upside is 100% there, but the hit tool is a very concerning. He's in an organization that can help him. He's in Kansas City now. They are a slappy speed organization at the moment. Now they have a new front office, but definitely some potential there. Talked about Mason Wynn and Mason Hour as well. Is there anybody further down, Robbie? I know Matt McLean that we talked about last
week.
No, I mean, in there, but
yeah, there's a bunch of guys that have a few, right? Lawrence Butler's got six. That's great. Ed Julien has six. That's great. But that, you know, that's good. Right? Like there's obviously there was a lot of base stealing going on in the AFL. And that's about it. Like that's the easiest way to sum that up. I think it would be a good idea now that we've gone through, I mean, we can still certainly go through more categories, but I'm getting a list together of some guys that I'm going to write down who are kind of like notables for us that are outside that top 100 prospect. And we'll just kind of track them this off season. And maybe we'll have just before the season starts an episode and we'll see if they have made their way onto lists, made their way as notables in fantasy.
And I think there's a couple just notables on the power side. We've talked a lot about the guys that are in the five home run tier for the AFL. Matt Mervis, who we haven't talked about yet, was of the leaders, six bombs in 58 at bats. He did hit 276, a pretty good stat line, 959 on the OPS side. So we're definitely interested or paying attention to Mervis, who's a Cubbies prospect and definitely opening some eyes this fall.
Well, I was going to say, Ty, I absolutely think we could see him just become an opening day first baseman. Frank Schwindel crashed and burned hard last year. And I mean, Mervis here had a full season and 36 dingers to his credit with a 309 average and a 379 OBP. Now he played high A and not a small amount. He had 100 at bats at high A, double A, 200. Triple A 200, and he was consistent across the board. Did not crush any one level over the other. I guess the 14 dingers at Double A in 200 at bats was great, but then he went and hit 15 in 209 at Triple A. So I think he just was hot last year. So if there's a Nelson Velasquez, also conveniently a Cub, who kind of powered up and made a name for themselves here, I would argue Matt Mervis for that. And Mervis draft info here. Let's see. So he was drafted in the 39th round of 2016. Holy crap. So he has been kicking around. I don't know what that Nationals Cubs trade was that got him over there, but he's been a pro since 2016.
Interesting.
High school drafted kid.
Well,
so must have been a signing bonus for him to sign in the 39th round, right? There's a story.
It's worth digging. And I think the last category I want to throw at you, Robbie, is a combination of two categories. Sorted first by hitting and in reverse order of strikeouts. So we're going to see who has the hit tool with the contact rates is really what we're trying to chase here. So we've got the hitters at the top. And then once they're into the tie-in categories, we're going to kind of filter through it. So Kjerstad is an interesting one, 98 at bats, 35 hits, 31 strikeouts. So a bit of a hit and miss there. With that one, that's basically a 30% plus strikeout rate, which generally scares people away. Five bombs, 1.007 OPS. We like to see Austin Martin, on the other hand, 30 hits, seven strikeouts, Robbie. So I know you're listening there. Yeah. The stolen bases were there as well. And then Edard Julien just is everywhere right now in this stat line for obvious reasons. Zach Veen, we talked about Nick York, Ronnie Simon, Tyler Hardman again led the way with hits. And I guess the only guys I'm gonna flag there, Austin Martin with the contact rate. Zach Veen had eight strikeouts in his 81 at bats. So 10% strikeout rate for Veen against some upper tier talent, which we like, and I think bodes well for him progressing even quicker through it. If we go down a little bit further here, Papayas had 12 strikeouts in 81 at bats. So again, basically that 10% rate while hitting ridiculous 904 OPS. So we like these kind of guys. I just wanted to flag a couple of those. The only other guy with a pretty decent ratio is a guy that's worth noting, Robbie, was an AFL All-Star. We talked about him before he jumped on tonight, and that's Zach Britton of the Blue Jays. Definitely a very quiet player in that organization, but also quiet on a lot of radars. Hit 404 in the fall, 19 hits, 7 strikeouts. So again, good hit tool, good contact rates, a lot of good stuff to look for there. Still
2020 draft class as well. Sorry, Ty, just 2020 draft class as well for Zach Britton. And as I had said to you before, I feel like a lot of people discounted him, and as silly as it sounds, simply because there's a Zach Britton pitcher. And what are the odds? You know, what are the odds you're going to have two same name dudes? But Zach Britton now, the Blue Jays, is a notable prospect.
Yeah, I would agree. And I mean, I still am concerned by fantasy upside, but I think for deeper leagues, like probably a reasonable outfielder. And I'm going to throw something on him that may be the worst or potentially best thing that ever happened to him. Like, he reminds me.
One or the other, though.
There is no between, and you'll understand why when I say what I'm about to say. I see a lot of Nomar Mazara's early days in him.
No.
A flat left-handed swing, drives the ball. There's some tools there that could be, especially in Toronto, like could be a really nice addition to that lineup. Left-handed contact power, you know, that drive it to the gap, get people on base, move them over, kind of bat the Jays kind of need, frankly. So I can see it sliding in nicely into that lineup. That's why I wanted to flag that skill set, because I the big thing for him to be great is the power. It's a little lacking right now. That would be the one big concern I have with Britton. He's got the upside, though. The size is there. The power is there. It's just a matter of whether he can get the lift. So that's why I dropped the Mazara flag on him, because it's appropriate.
Okay. Okay. Well, one guy I did want to mention, just because he did go, was, I guess there's a couple guys to mention, but, you know, hot prospects there. Jason Dominguez went 167 average, 5 stolen bases, and 1 dinger, I think he had. Oh, no dingers. Sorry, no dingers. Not great. 11 hits on the campaign. I think this was just more experience to give to him. But Jason Dominguez prospect stock, as we know, since signing has just went down because everybody's doing that classic reset on, you know, a J2 guy, on a highly hyped guy. And we've still got to give him time to develop. There are very few kids his age that would have even been in consideration to go. And definitely he was one of the guys with the least amount of pro experience, I think, that was there. Like stateside pro experience. Logan Wyatt, who is kicked around, he's still with the Giants right now. He's another guy to mention. Potential guy to just like come up and do stuff next year. He had a 306 average in 49 at bats with 17 walks, 15 hits for himself. Power was not there, but he's somebody who I have wanted to see come up, wanted to see some things happen. Ty, your boy was there. Your cheating Grant Levine, Colorado, first baseman, was there. 61 at bats, 328 average, excellent. 11 runs.
Levine's not the cheater.
Levine's not the cheater. He's the Canadian high schooler, then.
No.
Who's the cheater from Colorado?
He's with the Giants now. What is his name? Yeah, he got traded. Give me 2 seconds.
I'll Grant Levine the line. 61 at bats, 13 runs. Correct myself. 11 RBIs, 3 stolen bases, a dinger, and 8 walks. So good to see that he was up. Justin Henry Molloy of Atlanta was up 70 at bats. He had a 286 average, 9 runs, 6 RBIs, a stolen base, no dingers, 15 walks though. So good OBP for him.
Colton Walker is the name you're looking for.
Oh, thank you. Well, Grant Levine was still there. And he's still a notable because of the average. My apologies for saying he cheated. I got my Coloradans high round picks confused.
I'm really proud of you. You named very few Seattle Mariner prospects in this episode.
It was hard because I mean, I had woohoo, and that was pretty much it. So,
which is fair, because I finally have the soundbite for when you mentioned the Mariner is set up, so I'm ready for the next time you drop it.
Sorry, wait, I'm not going to do it this episode. What do you, the Mariner, if I start talking Mariners?
If you bring up Jerry at all.
We should just have a segment. Like, he hasn't even. Yes. And he hasn't done anything yet this offseason. So,
yeah.
I mean, but hopefully by the time this comes out.
He did not sign Haniger, which was a smart move. Now your boy Kyle Lewis can be a major leaguer again.
Let's hope. Oh man, Kyle Lewis just needs 400 at bats in 2023, and at the end of the 400th at bat, if he's legit, he's legit, right?
He can platoon with the Knicks in Cincinnati.
Yeah, that's
play, play the other 500 at bats that they're not going to play.
Well, like because it was like the you know, veteran-y type dudes could go to Colorado, like Chris Owings of the world. Brandon Drury's were going to Cincinnati. So we're going to need to find, like KC used to scoop up vets. We're going to need to find those homes for those guys so that we can, not the like proven veterans, but the guys who are like cusp MLBers who want everyday jobs. We're going to need to find spots for them. And it's not Seattle anymore, baby. No, thank you.
I did my free agent predictions today. And like I do every year, I give absolutely no one to the Yankees. But I also went through that list and I struggled because there's a lot of those guys this year that fit that, like, you're a veteran, where do you go kind of thing.
Right. Like, everything's
open. All over the place. And like, there's not enough spots for some of these guys. Like, it's going to be an interesting offseason. I'm curious to see it. And when you hear rumors about like Acuna being on the market, it's just like, pardon me, say what? What are you trying to accomplish? There's all this depth. That's not the environment I would want to be trading or even talking about trading Ronald Acuna. I think it's 100% a rumor by the Braves to get Swanson to sign a cheaper deal. I'm going to flag that.
There was also talk of Chipper Jones publicly commenting that he doesn't think Acuna's the kind of guy you want around for championships. I don't remember the exact wording of that, but that's just one of those rumor mill things, right? That's how things get started. Issues could happen or not, but I forget exactly what it was. But either way, I mean,
yeah,
we're heading into that time, right? Like the Kershaw to Rangers, but he's just going to end up back at the Dodgers.
And, he's already signed. You know, signed.
Yeah. Is it official?
So, yep. 20 mil.
Okay.
So that's hot news, but the reality is we are entering prime time. We're entering, how many times a day do you refresh MLBtraderumors.com time of the year? We've all been there. We all have that addiction. So don't you judge anybody else when we say that out loud. So great spot to leave it there, Robbie. It's been another episode that we've kept under 80 minutes. Thank you.
Boom, baby.
Small victories. But until next time, it's been Rob and Tyler here on Dingers.